Hello and welcome to episode 36 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, we have a roundup of the latest news and results from around the world, including the Great North Run and the Fifth Avenue Mile. And we also have an in-depth interview with Birmingham-based athlete Dougie Muzzin ahead of his London Marathon debut. As always, I'm joined by Kat Hutchison and George Beardmore. How are we doing, guys?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, George. How are you, Kat?
Yeah, good. Thanks.
Let's start with you, Kat. Last time we spoke, you were still struggling with your knee and still trying not to be an idiot in your training. How's all that going?
Yeah, so still trying very hard not to be an idiot, but there has been a bit of a breakthrough with the knee. So it's not exactly a large-scale randomised control trial, but my friend Debbie started taking CBD oil, and after taking it for a week, she didn't have ankle pain anymore. She's had it for 2 years. So I thought that's good enough evidence for me. So I went and got some of that. And since then, my knee has been a lot better.
Wow.
So yeah, it's seems to be good stuff, but it's on the first day I took it was a little bit bad. I didn't really read the bottle properly, and it said 3 drops, and I just kind of got the pipette thing and just stuck some under my tongue, and all day I was so spaced out. It was really bad. I'd just taken too much, so it is apparently one of the side effects if you overdo it, but so all day I was just felt really weird, just totally spaced out. But since then I've backed off and just do a drop or two in the morning and at night, and it seems to be, yeah, the knee hasn't given me nearly as much trouble. Obviously I saw you two last night and I did first 6 mile run and that went okay.
Oh, that's interesting. So how often are you taking it? Every day?
Yeah, so every day, a couple of times a day. Just I was doing 1 drop, but I'm getting a bit more brave and starting to do 2 drops. And
We are seeing more and more athletes on Instagram and what have you advertising it, aren't we? So I think it's probably a growing thing in the running world. I don't know about you, George. Have you seen?
Yeah, I use it. Yeah.
You use it as well?
Yeah, I had problems with sleep. I had problems with sleep, particularly in Loughborough. During exams, I think, is when my sleep problem started. And then it got in my head that I couldn't sleep, so I slept less. And yeah, it's helped massively. I mean, it's obviously all WADA legal and everything, which is good. They have legalized it. So I think I take like 0.5 milliliter every night before bed. I think you're supposed to take up to 1.2 milliliters, and there's no like anti-doping limit. It's just like if you take too much, I think it can make you feel a bit drowsy. But it seems to be helping. It's helped my sleep. So yeah, I know there are a lot of athletes using it and like advocating it. So yeah.
Oh, I'd have to get on it. What brands have you guys got?
I've got Pure Sports, I think, which I first saw it on Jenny Nesbitt's Instagram. I think she's sponsored by them.
I've got one. It's from Holland and Barrett. It's the strongest one they do, which is what it's what Debbie sent me through that she had been using. So
cool. I think there are ways of different ways of administering it as well. Can you get it as like a massage rub sort of thing as well?
I think so. Yeah.
I think there's. I did quite a bit of research in between Debbie telling me about it and buying it, and I listened to a whole load of different podcasts, and some were like absolutely selling it as a miracle drug, it will solve all of life's problems, and others were more sort of based on the science and said there is actually no research. But they all concluded that although there's no research, that's only because it's not been done, and that they do actually believe that it works, even though there's nothing, they've only got evidence for stronger doses. But they do believe
and particularly
that
for works. Pain relief. And I suppose you're using it for sleep, George. So
yeah, I think mine is sleep specific. I think it's got other stuff in it, I can't remember what, but other sleep related stuff in it. But I think you can use it pretty much anything. I think the Pure Sport range has like a a boost range and a sleep range. Yeah, so I think you can use it for anything, really.
I think it's meant to have anti-inflammatory properties, which is why it works on injuries.
How much are they charging for this stuff?
The Pure Sport isn't cheap at all. I think a month's supply can be like £60-70, depending on how much you use. Well, no, maybe that's 2 months. Either way, it's not that cheap, but it works. It works.
Yeah. Oh. It's pretty expensive. I think it's £60 for a 30ml bottle.
Yeah.
At Holland & Barrett, but I managed to get two of those for £47 just because there were some sales on. But it's pretty expensive.
Yeah, cool. Well, good news. So what's the plan now, Kat, moving forward? More CPD?
Yeah, just keep taking more. And it also has the effect, if you take it before you run, I found out last night, you don't think too much about your running either. Yeah. Just a bit spaced out while you run. But yeah, hopefully I can start doing a few more runs like that. I'm going to go out in a minute and after we've finished recording and go and see if my knee really has done okay with that 6 miles yesterday, and then start pushing on to get some miles back in before Telford in December.
That sounds good.
It's the end of the race walk season now. Did my last walk at the Vets Cup final.
How did it go? Did you PB?
No, it's pretty bad actually, because 2 years ago I beat Nick Hitchens by 1 second, and I've managed to hold that for 2 years and be the race walk champion, but he's just beaten that by about 3 seconds last weekend, so that's a little annoying. I'm gonna have to wait till next summer to try and get that back.
Have to train over winter for it.
Yeah, start getting some proper training in.
Sounds good. Talking of proper training, George, how are things going with you? We spoke last time and you told us you were lined up for a couple of 10-mile races. Getting back into full training now?
Yeah, pretty much. I had a week off? End of August. So, yeah, I've been running for, 2-3 weeks now. So all going well, really. Training's been good. Feeling, I think I had my vaccine the first day I started running again, pretty much. So I felt pretty rubbish for a week, and I think that was a combination of having taken a week off, but also the vaccine. But feeling really good now. So road relays in just over a week. So that'll be like the first, just to see where I am really, in like terms of road races, road form. And then, 10 miles at the Great South Run on the 17th of October. So that's sort of the main aim for now. And then, and cross country as well. Once I get back to Loughborough, we'll be doing cross country specific sessions. And all going well.
Sounds good. Well, we'll get back into, we've mentioned my training in a bit, but you mentioned the road relays. So we've got the Midland Road Relays at Sutton Park a week on Saturday. One of the news articles that we were going to talk about was the fact that the Southern relays have been cancelled. So that's obviously massively disappointing for all of the clubs in the South there, because of the way it's such a big thing on the race calendar for the clubs, for it to be cancelled. It's fairly disappointing. George, I know you saw a lot of info on sort of social media, on Twitter, of people upset about it.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems a bit, The reason doesn't seem like that. Well, it's just maybe a bit lazy, or they could have done more about it. So I think it's because the stand at Crystal Palace Stadium that they use, I presume, for the start and finish facility for the road relays, they're not allowed to use the stand, so they can't use the track, or there's no seating. But why they can't, because I presume they then go out of the track onto roads around Crystal Palace, I don't know why they couldn't redo the route somehow or find another venue. It just seems like they probably could have done more, and I think that's what people are saying on social media. And I don't really know how they now qualify for the nationals, because I presume like the Midland Road Relays, it gets you into the national road relays. I don't know, I presume so. yeah, bit of a shame. And I think it's an event that everyone likes doing the road relays, everyone enjoys and was looking forward to doing because it's been a couple of years now. And yeah, so well, it's also quite short notice, only a week before. I presume they've known that this was an issue for longer than that. So yeah, yeah. Bit of a shame.
So the general reaction seems to be, why not use a different venue? Why is it such short notice? Bit of a lazy excuse, as you've said. People have been saying we shouldn't be accepting this from SEAA. Crystal Palace is perfectly fit for purpose, and if it's not, then use a different venue or don't use the track. So yeah, a bit of backlash there, as you'd expect, particularly with the real short notice, as you've said.
Yeah, seems like there could have been a lot of other options there. Just the road relays isn't run over a specific distance. They could have just shortened the course to cut that out. And just, you know, I mean, Sutton Park's got portaloos and a few tents. It really doesn't need a whole stadium stand to use. So,
yeah,
it's a real shame for all those runners down south. That's really disappointing.
Yeah, and the statement sort of finishes with the line, we'll be promoting the event in 2022 at another venue and look forward to seeing you then. So it doesn't look like it's going to get resolved this year. As we said, we'll be doing the Midland Road Relays, George, at Sutton Park, which is the week before the London Marathon for me, which is now only 2.5 weeks away. So probably the first week of a bit of a taper for myself, reducing the miles a bit. You and I did a bit of a session yesterday, George, with some marathon pace or some over-under marathon pace stuff going on. We did a 10-mile at my marathon pace last week as well. So just trying to tune into that marathon pace as much as possible over the next, well, over the last couple of weeks and over the next week or so whilst reducing the mileage. So it's getting a bit real now. I'm getting the information through about the expo and the start and all of that. So it will soon be upon us.
So what sort of mileage have you been running in this block? Have you cut it back at all?
Yeah, a little bit. I think I probably averaged more like 85-ish across the block rather than 95-ish that I did last time. So, yeah. And that's obviously a bit up and down, some higher, some lower than that. But that's probably my average. So, yeah, I'm going in with a little less mileage than I have done before. So, yeah. We'll see if that's a good idea or not in a few.
Yeah, you got to test these things out.
Yeah. But yeah, excited to give it a go now, seeing the adverts on the TV and things like that. So yeah, all good. The other news we've got this week, guys, or that there's a few sort of news articles all sort of centered around doping, bans being upheld, and just sort of fairly disappointing news, I suppose. George, the two main ones, I suppose, or confirmations of Shelby Houlihan's ban being upheld. And we obviously know who Shelby Houlihan is and that story, and also the Alberto Salazar ban being upheld as well. I suppose the newer news, although it's not distance running and some sort of an event we don't normally talk about, but the fact that the GB men's relay team maybe losing or set to lose their silver medal.
Yeah, I mean, that last one's a real shame, obviously. But yeah, I mean, there's no excuse, I suppose. I mean, I think it's going to the Court of Arbitration of Sport, isn't it? So whether Ujar does have an excuse or a reason, I don't know. But I mean, it feels worse when it's a team medal because you've let other people down. So yeah, there's just no real... Yeah, excuse for that for me. I think if he's knowingly doped, then there's just no coming back from that. I think in terms of reputation and what would it be, 2 years or 4 years? Either way, it's he'll potentially miss Paris. So just a real shame for British Athletics that I don't know if that will affect. Obviously, it affects their medal count. I don't know if it will affect funding. Certainly, reputation. Yeah, not great.
Yeah, so for those listeners who aren't completely clear on the story, so that's British sprinter CJ Ujar. His B sample has been confirmed the positive banned substance that his A sample tested for, and he was part of the men's 4x100 meter relay who won silver at Tokyo. And the sample was tested for the banned substance osterine, which is an anabolic steroid type substance cap. So disappointing news there, I suppose.
Yeah, very disappointing. The Shelby Houlihan one's pretty interesting. What's going on with her? So she's her appeal has failed, and she's and when you look at the reasons why it failed, it's quite interesting because all of them still say possible but not probable, and possible but unlikely. So there's always going to be that little bit of doubt that she could have actually been telling the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I think with that one, it the only fact, I suppose, is that she had a banned substance in her body, and that's sort of the only thing that they know is true. I think I'd read somewhere that they think she should have kind of gone and got a sample of that meat for testing, and she didn't do that, which would seem an obvious thing to do if you think that was where it came from. So I don't think that necessarily helped. And I think what they presumably decided is that the story was just too unlikely to overrule the evidence that she had tested positive, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if I've said it before when we were discussing this, I can't remember if we've discussed it on here, but you know how she says about the what she did first when she found out that she had tested positive was search up what nandrolone was. I reckon if she could show me her internet history, and that's genuinely what she did when she found out, when she got that letter, if you could see the history on her thing and it said she typed in what was nandrolone, then I'd maybe believe her. So if she could just show me that, then she'll have one person that genuinely believes that she didn't know what she tested positive for. But I don't know.
She might have known it under a different name though as well. You might just know it as an anabolic steroid. So
yeah, but she says she didn't know what it was, and that's what she did when she first found out. She said she searched what is nandrolone. So if she could show me that, then I'll believe her.
That was certainly the thing that stuck out to me, the fact that the coach and the athletes said they hadn't heard of the substance before. That was certainly a red flag for me to hear that. It just seems very unbelievable. But you don't know, do you? That's the problem with all these things. You just don't know.
No.
But it seems unlikely that the story that she gave anyway is true based upon the evidence. And you can actually go in and look at all of it now. It's all been published, and quite a lot of detail. You can see the reasons or the potential story she gave and why they haven't upheld that. So it's interesting.
How does it make you two feel about the rest of the Bowman Track Club knowing that that's been found out there?
It doesn't help my opinion of them, I don't think. I think you don't want to just make people guilty by association, but I think I find it difficult to believe that if she knowingly doped, which we don't know if she did, but they've decided that's the most likely story. If she did knowingly dope, I find it hard to believe that no one else in the team or management or doctor or someone knew, because I think they've kind of, and the way they all defended her as well, I think they're known to be quite a close group, that they all get on really well and close friends. And I struggle to believe that, yeah, if she has knowingly doped, which obviously we don't know for definite, that I presume someone else either knew or is involved, or yeah, it's difficult because you don't want to start making other people guilty. But yeah, it doesn't look good, definitely.
No. Similar story, I suppose. Alberto Salazar, as you said, so he was given a 4-year suspension. That's been upheld. He's already served 2 years of that, I think I'm right in saying. I suppose questions will be asked whether the 4 years is sufficient given the severity of what he's been banned for. Associations with lots of athletes who are still racing, including Mo Farah. But yeah, that one seems to be put to bed now. Seems to be that he will serve the rest of his 2 years that's got left. And then we'll wait and see, I suppose, whether he's welcome back into the sport, whether other athletes would be happy to be coached by him. We'll see, I suppose, won't we, George?
Who would be coached by him? You would never be able to succeed without everyone distrusting you. It just wouldn't be worth it.
No, I can't imagine, because if you're doping and you're trying not to get caught, being coached by Salazar is not the best way of doing it. And if you're not doping, why on earth would you go near that? Like, yeah, I mean, I think it should be a lifetime ban. I think it should be lifetime bans for athletes as well, which is difficult when you have a Houlihan case where you genuinely don't definitely know. But
for most athletes, a 4-year ban is almost a lifetime ban because it takes them out. They're usually running pretty well when they get busted for drugs, and so it takes them out at their prime for 4 years.
But yeah, I don't see why Salazar should ever have the opportunity to come back, even if no one wants to. I mean, he's he obviously believes he's innocent. That's why he appealed. But I think everyone thinks differently. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. A different kind of controversy we saw at the Vienna Marathon. So the winner, the male winner who won in 2:09, let's see his name, Darara Harissa, I hope I got that somewhat correct, was about 45 minutes after winning the race, got disqualified for illegal shoes. So he was wearing the Adidas Prime X, which are 1 centimeter thicker than the allowed, is it 40 mils that's allowed in terms of stack height?
40 or 42 maybe?
42 mils maybe, yes. Yeah. So Adidas, a relatively new shoe, the Prime X, which are non-compliant, aren't race legal. He raced in them anyway, won the race, and then was disqualified. Apparently, listening to another podcast, Inside Running Podcast, they suggested that the shoes that he originally said he was going to wear were legal shoes, but then in the interim, he changed his mind and wore these ones, which is why he wasn't stopped wearing them, apparently. You would think he knew that he would know they were illegal, or maybe he didn't, but there we are.
Yeah, I think George there has put on the notes, doesn't everyone know that Primex shoes are non-compliant? Now, I wouldn't know that, but I'm not a professional athlete, so I guess I don't have to, but
yeah.
I think
I could make that mistake.
I just don't really see the point in the shoes. Like, why I know they're more of an experiment, aren't they? And they might be better for training and injury purposes, but I don't see why Adidas have bothered to make shoes that don't fit the rules. And then surely you think they'd make sure that all their athletes know for definite you can't wear these in races. I mean, he should have known anyway, as a world-class athlete, and certainly his coach should know, or someone should know. But yeah, I don't really see why they made them in the first place. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I suppose it must be a training shoe, you'd think. I don't know what they're marking them as, or that maybe they're saying, well, the top guys and women might get banned, but people probably aren't going to be checking my shoes. So maybe some others could get away with wearing them. But yeah, it seems a strange one. I agree. Why not just make them a centimetre or two less, and then they would be compliant?
Yeah, because Alpha Flies, Next Percent, Adidas Bros, whatever they're called, work perfectly well. I don't know why they needed to put more foam in there to make them, yeah, illegal. Oh, yeah, it just seems a weird one. But I mean, he certainly should have known. And I feel a little bit sorry for him. He said it like on the report that he was distraught and gutted that he lost his prize money and the time and everything. But yeah, it's a bit of a rookie error, really, isn't it?
Do we know where Harissa is from, George? What country?
I'm not sure, actually.
Okay. Well, whilst I have a Google of that, do you want to talk us through one or two of the results? Not a huge number of results, actually. We've got the Great North Run, obviously, which was the biggest thing on the calendar in the UK. And we've also got the New Balance Fifth Avenue Mile over New York, where we saw some wins for some familiar athletes.
Yeah, so if you start with New York, that was really impressive, really, to see two world-class fields, won by Brits, well, Scottish athletes as well. Whiteman and Riki, after long seasons, both won, and I think Whiteman ran 3:49, which seems really quick on a road, because that's like a 3:32 1500. And I know obviously road shoes have got better, but still, that seems pretty quick. And I think he I think Jake Hayward was third as well, behind Ollie Hoare. So yeah, just really impressive. And then I think Riki, she won in 4:21, which again is pretty quick because that means it's like a 4:03, 4:04, 1500. Yeah, so just really impressive wins. And yeah, again, like British distance running is just doing really well.
Yeah, very good. Is there a bit of a downhill? Is it? It's not completely flat, is it, that Fifth Avenue mile? Is it up and then down or vice versa? Do we know?
I'm not sure, actually. I suppose, I know it's obviously point to point, so you can be running with the wind the entire way, can't you?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I'm not sure about the elevation, but yeah, even so, very quick times.
Yeah, absolutely. And then quick times, Great North Run. I suppose impressive performances again from British athletes in both the male and female races. Mark Scott in the men's, particularly Ailish McColgan in the women's, particularly. What were the highlights, guys, from watching that?
Yeah, I think those two were the outstanding performances, really, from a British perspective. I think, obviously, Jake Smith ran really well as well. He ran 61.54. But Emil Kares running 61.57, half marathon debut, not someone who you'd think was like particularly well known on the world stage. We know him here in the UK, but obviously beat, I mean, McSwain obviously isn't a half marathon runner, but Kares beat him. He beat Bashir Abdi, who's obviously probably quite tired from the Olympics, but he's an Olympic marathon medalist. So I thought that was a real standout performance as well. Came fifth behind, yeah, Smith, Rupp, Chesarek and Scott. So yeah, I thought that was a really good performance from him.
Yeah, hopefully a name that we do hear more and more about and who does get a bit more attention if he wants it and a bit more of the limelight. He certainly ran really well. I remember talking about him at the 10,000 meter trials as well. So he's obviously in very good shape. So
is he doing London, do we know?
Sorry, George?
Is he doing London, do we know?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't think I saw him on the start list, but... No. Yeah, I suppose marathon's another step up from the half, but even, yeah, clearly going to be a very good roadrunner in his career.
And in the women's race, so Helen Abiri won in 67 minutes, 42 seconds, and then just 6 seconds behind in her debut, I believe, Ailish McColgan in 67 minutes, 48 seconds, and Charlotte Perdue backing up a good performance at the big half. Ahead of London Marathon, I believe, came third in 68 minutes, 49 seconds. Other Brits on that sort of top 10, Charlotte Arter, Cardiff, who ran 71 minutes, 11 seconds. Verity Ockenden, former interviewee. Natasha Cockrum, former interviewee. And Clara Evans, former interviewee of ours, came 8th, 9th and 10th, all running around 72, 73 minutes. So nice to see a good batch of GB runners there in the top 10.
Yeah, I think it was a great battle to watch between Ailish McColgan and Helen Obiri. I loved that, just watching every time they went up a hill, Helen Obiri kind of pulled away and then Alicia's coming back. I was absolutely glued to it watching that, just thinking, just hoping there was a chance that she might be able to stick with her and give a bit of a sprint finish. But it was a great run by Ailish, that was excellent.
Yeah.
And also Charlotte Perdue, that was great to see her run a quicker time than a few weeks ago on a much tougher course. So she's obviously in really good shape.
Yeah, so Charlotte Perdue's marathon PB, I believe, is 2:25. So I guess if it's a good day, conditions are good, we'd expect to see her go quicker than that in a couple of weeks. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's looking really good for that. I mean, that was a tough course and that was quick. So I think she's in really good shape.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, sounds good. Couple of other results. So we saw the final Diamond League event take place this past week. Keely Hodgkinson won the female 800 meter title, which bagged her a nice $30,000 in prize money, but also perhaps more importantly also means that she automatically qualified for the World Championships in Oregon next year, meaning that Great Britain, George, can take four athletes instead of three, which will hopefully mean good opportunities for other athletes in that event.
Yeah, I think I like that rule. They obviously don't do it at the Olympics, and it becomes particularly important for like American sprinters, Jamaican sprinters, Kenyan distance runners, where just getting into the team is a pretty big ask. However good you are, there's always big names not delivering at the trials. So to be able to just get your spot kind of booked in already is really good news. And I'm pretty sure it means GB can take four athletes. In fact, yeah, I'm sure they can. So yeah, just gives opportunities for some of the younger ones coming through. Obviously there's loads of opportunities anyway, because there's three championships with the Commonwealth and Europeans as well. So there's no way everyone's doing all three. So there's going to be, I think, lots of either youngsters coming through or just first time GB kind of vests and stuff. I think it obviously you've still got to have the qualifying times, but it certainly does open it up. Yeah, really well for people to come through and yeah, opportunities for everyone, which is great.
Yeah. And then one event which I think went under the radar a little bit, considering the times run, was the Adidas event, which took place in Germany, the Adizero Road to Records. We saw a couple of world records there, George, in the women's side of things. Didn't see a huge amount before this happening. I don't know about you. I didn't see much advertising for it. But a couple of world records over there in Germany.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons it probably went under radar a little bit is because they were woman only world records, weren't they? I think both in the 5 and 10K, which means it's got a little bit of an asterisk by it, because someone has run quicker, but just in a race with men as well as women. So yeah, I mean, I suppose that's a whole nother debate whether those woman only records should actually be a thing, but yeah, it certainly went under the radar. But yeah, it seemed like a good event, like a good idea to put on. I'll be honest, I didn't watch any of it, but it seemed like it was just kind of a series of fast races put on for people to attack world records and fast times. And yeah, I think that can only be a good thing. So yeah, good idea.
Yeah. And really now with the Diamond League finish, that sort of brings to an end the track season, as far as I know, in terms of the major events. But we'll soon have lots of autumn road marathons to be talking about, in particularly the majors are all happening. So the six world majors are all happening within the space of 10 days or so. So we should see plenty of marathon performances and hopefully some quick times over the autumn. Anything in particular you're looking forward to watching, Kat, in terms of those autumn marathons coming up?
I want to see Bukele, if he's still going to race, maybe in one, maybe in two. So yeah, really looking forward to that, and obviously looking forward to Charlotte Perdue and how she's going to get on. I think she'll do well, and yeah, I love the marathons. It's great to have so many coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun the next couple of months.
Yeah, George, predictions for the next sort of month or so of road marathons over the autumn?
I'd never get too excited about watching Bukele, just because you're always let down when he then doesn't turn up. But yeah, I mean, it's a shame there's no Kipchoge, obviously, understandably. But yeah, I think I'm really excited for London. I want to see, there's going to be some great British fields, men and women. So that'll be exciting. So hopefully some good performances there. I'm trying to remember who's actually running in the other ones.
I think we had a chat, George. Because of COVID and other things, it seems to be fewer international athletes at some of these events, which does sort of shine the light on, well, the UK events anyway, such as the London Marathon, Big Half, Great North Run. We do seem to be seeing a few more British athletes in the limelight a bit more this year for the UK-based races, which is a nice sort of upside to all the negative things that COVID's brought our way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think because they're all on at the same time as well, it just means it's all like the international stars are spread a bit thinner, and they'll go presumably where the most prize money is, and or where like the best athletes aren't going, so that they can try and win prize money elsewhere. So I think London will be a really good one, just because there's so many Brits making either debuts, or people like Perdue and Mellor who are kind of out to prove a point, and that'd be a story. It's going to be, and then there's qualifying times for next year as well with the Commonwealths, Europeans and Worlds. So yeah, exciting.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, this week's interview is Dougie Muzzin. I spoke to him a week or so ago, just after he had run the big half marathon, and he's making his marathon debut at London. So Dougie is he's based at Birmingham, part of the Birmingham Elite Track Club and the Birmingham Uni Hub development over there. Spent a lot of his previous career running steeplechases, running track races, and now has stepped up to the longer distance over the road events. So we had a really good chat, spoke about the big half, spoke about his training towards London, spoke about his goals in that race, talking about potential qualification for either the Commonwealth or the Worlds or the Europeans next year. Being Birmingham based, to run in the Commonwealth Games next year was obviously a big thing for him. So yeah, we spoke about that and a few other things. He works as well, so I spoke about balancing his training with work and life in general. So nice chat with Dougie. We actually spoke to him, George, after he raced in the Oregano Distance Project Classic that you paced me in over 10,000 meters. So we sort of collared him there, had a chat with him, and then he agreed to an interview. So really nice guy. Spoke to him for about 30, 40 minutes. So yeah, we hope you enjoy listening to that. And it should hopefully give him a bit of an insight when you're watching him at London Marathon in a couple of weeks' time.
Yep, brilliant. I hope at London because quite often there's only ever cameras on the lead group and we never really know what the Brits are doing until the results come through. So hopefully they can try and make a bit more of a feature of that on the coverage. But
splits. Yeah, can you track the elite field like you can track normal runners in London?
I don't know.
Because you probably should be able to, shouldn't you, if they've got... It'd be fun to be able to track them too.
Yeah, I would hope so. I know there's an app this year, like there always is, so...
Yeah.
Always good to watch the dot on the screen and the...
Yeah, we'll be tracking you. And John has got plans to drive his little Citroen down to the green at Blackheath.
Yeah.
Park it there.
He likes to stand at 40k so he can see people at their worst, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Cool. Anything coming up, guys, this week? Anything fun? Got any good training sessions planned? More CBD for you, Kat?
Yeah, just lots more CBD. And then I think next weekend I'm going to go and watch the road relays because we've got a ladies team there and I love it. And then I'm marshalling at Pitchcroft 10K on Sunday 26th. Anyone listening, there'll still be time to get an entry in. Flat, fast, awful. I think I have said before about Pitchcroft that it's windy and exposed, but otherwise flat and fast.
Otherwise come along. Yeah,
come along. It'll be fun. It probably won't be windy.
Yeah. George, anything coming up for you?
Nothing in particular. I'll probably be in for next time we record. I think I'm going to university Monday the 27th, I think, is when I'm heading off. So yeah, I suppose that, and not doing much between now and then other than running, I suppose.
All right, sounds good. Well, listen, thanks very much, guys. We hope you enjoy listening to the interview, and thanks as always for listening in, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Cheers, guys.
Cheers. See ya.
Cheers. Bye.
This week on Track, we are delighted to be joined by an athlete who will be making their marathon debut at this October's London Marathon, Dougie Muzzin. We were speaking to Dougie a few days after he ran a half marathon PB of 64.36 at the Big Half in London. Dougie has impressive PBs across the distances from a 3:46 1500 metres to a 29-minute 23-second 10K. Dougie, who runs for Notts but who is based in Birmingham and part of the Birmingham Track Elite, is coached by Luke Gunn and is hoping to secure a place in the Commonwealth Games for next year. Hi, Dougie, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How about yourself, Ben?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Thanks very much for taking some time out to chat to us here at Track. We're speaking on a Thursday evening, and it's the Thursday after the Sunday in which you took to the streets of London and raced the big half on Sunday. You finished in ninth place, PB, 64 minutes, 36 seconds. So first of all, a few days out, how are the legs? Any niggles, any soreness?
I actually feel really good. Bizarrely, I think normally after a PB and especially after the half marathon distance, you expect to be quite banged up for quite a while. Definitely the first 2 days were quite tender, but managed to sneak in a session last night. Nothing too strenuous, but got the legs moving and felt really good. And just prior to this, just got back from a nice easy single today. So feeling pretty good.
That's good. And so straight back into it this week, obviously we're, as we'll talk about, 5 or so weeks out from London Marathon. So was it just straight back into a fairly normal training week, perhaps a later session than normal?
Yeah, so in terms of my prep, I had 4 weeks of kind of quite high mileage and kind of intense base work, or just general kind of marathon training as it was. I eased off a little bit going into the race because myself and my coach just kind of wanted to target it a little bit and just give an honest reflection as to where we are kind of midway through and the last bit of this build. And this week, yeah, like you say, jump straight back into it. So it's just trying to get miles in on tired legs is not ideal, but it's going to build great strength. And that's exactly what I need for the marathon. So yeah, back into it this week. It was, a pretty kind of an easy one midweek, but we were hoping the way that we ran it and that strength that's in the legs, we can bounce back. And got another hard one on Sunday, which will be good.
Okay, great. What have you got? Long run on Sunday?
Yeah, so Sunday I think it's going to be a split 20 miler. So it will be about 60 minutes of steady state, or kind of working down steady state, and then 60 minutes of tempo. So jumping straight into it. And then main focus is going to be bottles and gels for the second half.
Okay.
To really get used to that kind of fueling, which is something that, being kind of new to marathon, is different, and you've definitely got to take the time to get used to it.
How did your fueling go on Sunday at the big half? Did you take gels on board or drinks or not do anything?
Yeah, I mean, previously when I've raced halves before, I haven't. But this time it was a good chance to kind of do a bit of a dress rehearsal. So breakfast and pre-nutrition was all exactly the same. I didn't take anything on board until about mile 7, where I did just have a gel, just to kind of, more than anything, just check that the gut was okay. And again, start getting more of that training in, especially at speed. It's one thing to take a gel, but then when you're trying to keep composed and do your race pace, it is completely different. So practicing that, taking on water, but yeah, it was just to kind of just rehearsal more than anything, not for any need of it. That's all.
Great. Okay. Well, let's get into it a little bit then, if that's okay with you. So as we said, you ran a PB 64:36. Previously, you'd run 64:55 in Spain, which we'll perhaps talk about in a second. And it was a cluster of four or five men who ran 64-something. So we did catch a glimpse of you on the coverage, but not a huge amount. So you ran similar times to the likes of Johnny Miller, Ollie Lockley, Callum Johnson, Jamie Crowe. So how did the race unfold? Were you guys working together? Were you very much going out at a certain pace and checking the watch, or did you just race those around you and run to feel?
Yeah, I think, we definitely formed a group. So from mile one, obviously, the guys took off pretty quick. And I think the first mile was about a 4:36, something like that, maybe even below. I was kind of committed to that probably for about the first K and thought, okay, I don't want to kind of go into the red too soon. Just having not raced for quite a while, especially over that longer distance, maybe being a bit tentative and just holding back that little bit. So kind of dropped back into a beautiful group that was myself, Matt Clowes, Ollie Lockley and Callum Johnson. So we really kind of worked together pretty much until the 5 mile pass or the dreaded cobbles, which we were just talking about. Then we kind of all started to have little, kind of few had bad patches and kind of splintered a little bit. Matt kind of took off and ran a beautifully paced race himself and obviously stormed through the field. But the rest of myself, Callum and Ollie managed to kind of stay together probably again until about mile 7, and then Ollie took off a little bit ahead, and then it was just myself and Callum pretty much going in a two up until just the end.
Mm. And so that sort of 64 minute mark, was that something you had in your head before you started? Do you think that's probably a fair reflection of where you and Luke, your coach, thought you were at?
Yeah, I think we kind of wanted to target it somewhat. So we did kind of taper into it, like I said. But at the same time, having the last time when I did that that race in Spain, was a kind of a track runner, and that was the main focus for that winter, was going up to the half marathon distance and kind of topping out there, as it were. So a few big sessions were just all orientated towards the half marathon, and probably like 10K sort of strength. Whereas now I hadn't done too many real specific half marathon sessions, especially kind of that sustained tempo, like 450s, anything like that, just to kind of really get the legs moving and feel that, I guess, that burn when you get to about 8 miles. So, I mean, interestingly, I kind of felt somewhat how I feel like I should for doing a marathon. I haven't not run one yet. I couldn't go too much faster, but I just found that I wasn't dying. I was just kind of like, oh, no, I'm not dead yet. Just stay here. It was kind of, yeah, bizarre feeling, something I've not felt before, but felt like it pretty much should for the marathon in terms of obviously doubling the distance.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I'm sure listeners know, but for those of you that you are running London Marathon on the 3rd of October. So I think it's about 5.5 weeks away now.
Yeah.
So I suppose running the streets of London on this Sunday gave you a bit of a taste for the type of atmosphere, the type of race you may experience. What's that done in terms of nerves, excitement, apprehension, looking ahead to the big one, I suppose?
Yeah. I mean, it's not only is it brilliant to kind of, pardon me, have mass races on again. That was probably the first thing that I noticed, just being in the company of so many different people, not just in the elite section, but having a glance around and seeing people behind. It's great, and it's brilliant, especially having the crowds as well. So in terms of excitement, it's well up there. And I guess going across Tower Bridge, there was kind of nothing quite like that. I had been fortunate to do big half the year previous, which didn't go very well for myself. But yeah, it gets you a taste of what it's going to be like come marathon day, which is exciting. I guess in terms of getting used to the race, I mean, I can only hope that I can have a group of guys like I did on Sunday for... yeah, a good while into the race. That'd be an absolute dream if I could be in a group of like that for about 20 miles and then see what happens then. Yeah, but as we know, the marathon's a different beast, and you've got to kind of commit and, like you say, try and get into a group, and then just get as comfortable and relaxed as possible there.
Sure. So what does the next 4, 5, 6 weeks look like for you? Any more races, or is it purely training now, and I suppose a little bit of a taper, 1 week, 2 week taper before October the 3rd?
Yeah, so it's going to, yeah, like I say, this week's straight back into the thick of it. A few quite big weeks, biggest that I've done in this build, and really focused sessions. I mean, having a quick look at my training plan ahead, the sessions are coming thick and fast, and it's just about really making sure that I can capitalize on where I'm at now. And just preparing everything else around that. So the nutrition is a big thing, making sure that that's honed. There's obviously still a lot of work that can be done physically, but we don't want to stress the body too much, especially this being a first marathon. So everything's a learning experience, which is brilliant, but at the same time, it's about kind of being smart. Racing wise, I might have a race potentially before, but yeah, it depends kind of how I take it. It's kind of close to, well, it's not too far out from London. So whether we take it controlled or whether we kind of see where we're at, yet to decide.
Great. Okay. Great. And just a little bit more about your training then. So you're coached by Luke Gunn. And in fact, you've spoken to a few athletes on here coached by Luke. So what's that like to be coached by Luke? Are you very much involved with the development of sessions and your training block, or is it very much prescriptive from Luke? And would you say you follow a fairly typical, or you have done, a fairly typical marathon approach? So mileage, tempos, thresholds, that sort of approach.
Sure. It's quite funny, obviously, the athletes that Luke's got now. I always kind of feel somewhat of a bit of his guinea pig. I was one of the first in his little cohort of athletes to be coached by him. And now kind of more specifically marathon, especially being one of the first to kind of be focused on for the marathon. So I definitely feel a bit of a guinea pig from him. I can't come too much in terms of like traditional marathon build, but I feel like we're getting things right. We're obviously testing to see how the body reacts to things. testing to see what works. I've never been a too high mileage kind of guy, even when I was doing track. And so getting the body used to 90 plus mile weeks back to back has been different. And I guess you probably look at it and think, oh, okay, most marathon guys are doing 100 plus right from the start of the build. With this being my first, obviously, that's kind of, didn't want to throw myself in at the deep end and cause injury or anything like that. So we've kind of staggered it, but I'm feeling great midway through. Body's coping well mentally. I'm ready and excited to obviously tackle that sort of distance. So I feel like he's honing things nicely. And in terms of kind of working together, we've worked together for quite a few years now. And as I've evolved as an athlete and generally kind of in the working space as well, I mean, he took me up when I was in university and now obviously I work full time. We've kind of adapted things a little bit. So Luke is my number one report and sets the sessions and kind of the strategy behind things. But in terms of like day-to-day running, obviously I kind of go off field and whatever I can fit in. So if I've got a meeting or something that runs over at the end of the day, or if I'm going to be running, commuting into work, out of work, whatever it might be, just I know that I've got to be fresh for those sessions that he sets me. So I've learned that over the years that I know what I need to do to get ready for those sessions and turn up. But yeah, it's a bit more relaxed, which is quite nice. If I don't feel like going for an evening run because of whatever, then don't feel pressured to do so.
Okay, great. So you mentioned it there, fitting it in around work. So I'm right in thinking you work full time. Is that right? And yes. You actually, the night we're talking tonight, you're actually sat in a hotel room being away with work. So you work for Up and Running UK, which is a branch of running specialist stores. And how is that fitting it in around life and work? And I suppose what are the challenges that come with that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I kind of transitioned into, I guess, more formal 9-to-5 office work. Probably about 18 months ago now, maybe a couple of years. And that's been an adjustment. That's been a real adjustment. I think when you're in university and when you're a bit younger, you kind of feel like you can get away with a lot. Whereas obviously when you've got the regiment of work and that set time, it's a lot different. So I've had to learn to love early mornings, which thankfully I kind of do. But yeah, in terms of the working kind of how it's been, it's allowed me to, well, it's kind of caused the move to marathon, probably a little bit sooner than maybe I'd anticipated. I think a lot of people will bizarrely understand that the marathon is more conducive to 9-to-5 work than probably like kind of full on track running. I mean, you can get up and slog some miles early in the morning, but trying to do a specific speed session you'd need to do for the track, it's not doable. Or at least it's very hard to do so. So yeah, the marathon is actually somewhat easier to kind of put around work, even though you're doing a lot more running. Yeah, it's bizarre, but it's been going well. And obviously working in the running industry, I get to kind of peek behind the curtain a little bit, which is nice. And it's different to get to see the kind of, yeah, the industry side and the corporate side of things is unique.
Okay. So are you traveling quite a lot up and down the country throughout the year? Or is it fairly few and far between these sorts of trips?
Yeah, it's a bit of everything. It really depends. Obviously no one's been doing too much travel recently. But before that, yeah, there is a little bit of travel involved in it. We obviously stock loads of different brands, which is brilliant. And obviously we get to talk to them and see kind of see what's coming and go and visit those sort of places. And obviously we have stores across the country. So there is quite a bit of traveling and that again means that I've got a backlight, packy kit, and kind of be willing to get a session in when you need to. But I think that you can obviously approach that in two ways and think that it's not going to be ideal. But then at other times it creates a great mental resilience. Like, you know that if you're not quite feeling it or work's not been there, you've got to turn up. And that could be the case on marathon day or that could be the case on race day. You maybe one or two things might not be right. You might not have slept exactly how you want to, but that gun's going to go off on the start line. And if you want to run it, you're going to do your best. So it kind of, I feel like it sets you up nicely to face those sort of challenges.
Mm-hmm. Right. Again, I'm sure our listeners know this, Dougie, but for a while there, your focus obviously was on the track, as you've said, but particularly for a little while, the steeplechase as well. And we know that Luke Gunn, your coach, also ran the steeplechase. So I suppose what are the major differences there? You've spoken about mileage and those intensity of the sessions, and a lot of logging miles for marathon, whereas maybe not so much on the track. Do you miss the intensity of the track, particularly the racing? So I suppose this summer you didn't do a full track season, which you would have done previous years gone by. Do you miss the intensity of the track and those sorts of experiences?
Yes and no. I think, I'd love to be able to race more. But I think with that comes this idea that there's always another opportunity. I think me as a runner and as an individual, I really like putting together, and Luke talks about this all the time, is I love putting together a week. Like I'll kind of plan it for Monday and think like, okay, I know what I can hit this week in terms of sessions, mileage, runs. And I'm a real stickler for kind of, as Luke says, putting together a really good week. So I guess if you kind of extrapolate that for a marathon, you can look at a marathon build 12, 16 weeks and think, right, I know I can put myself together for this duration, and it's going to come down to that single day, which is a lot of pressure and obviously can turn out for good or turn out for worse. But you kind of, I love training just as much as I love racing. So for me, putting together that whole build, come what may on race day, I can be content and happy with it. So yes and no.
I can definitely understand that for sure. In terms of training partners then, obviously you're, so Birmingham Track Elite is a big thing for you, and you were one of the athletes who was one of the driving forces behind that. We've also seen on Strava maybe a month or so again or ago doing a few sessions with Ben Connor. Who are you typically training with, or is a lot of your stuff solo, and how was it training with Ben for those sessions that you did?
Yeah, I mean, whoever's got a pair of running shoes and is willing to go for a run, I mean, I'll train with you. I think beggars can't be choosers, you know, like I'm more than happy to just have a run with anyone. In terms of kind of like the day-to-day things, it's pretty much all on my own or with my dog. I obviously take the dog out quite a bit for a run, which is, I guess, somewhat of a training partner. But where possible, I try and link up with individuals. I mean, this run I mentioned I've got this weekend, the session, one of the guys, Will Battersill, who's is in great shape and steeplechaser at the moment. He's coming over and he's going to jump in a little bit of the tempo at the end. So if things don't quite work, or in terms of having someone for the whole session, we're going to kind of like adapt things, and I'll have Luke on the bike where possible. So yeah, it's just, I guess, kind of being as flexible as possible and just trying to not only help yourself in terms of having someone who can be there with you for the session, but also helping someone else out. I mean, I've done plenty of pacemaking in my time, and I really like helping others achieve what they want to achieve, not just kind of the whole selfish side of things. In terms of training with Ben, that was, an incredible eye-opener. I mean, I think when you train with someone of that caliber, I've known Ben for years, growing up just over, just along the A52 from him in Notts. He's obviously gone on to achieve some incredible things, and kind of going back and training alongside him now, really makes you see what you need to do to get into that sort of, to achieve the sort of things that Ben's achieved, but also at the same time that it is possible. I mean, kind of went into some of the sessions thinking, right, don't get in his way, hang for him as long as you can, and you'll be okay. And I think you can kind of surprise yourself. So I'd always say to people, like, where possible, try and stretch yourself. If you can jump in with a group maybe once a month, it's a little bit faster than what you think you're capable of, like you'll surprise yourself, you know, and it could unlock a whole new level of what you thought you could do. Obviously take your time to approach it, and don't set yourself up to fail, but yeah, it's always worth kind of giving yourself a shot.
Great. And I suppose that was part of the ethos when you and others set up the setup of Birmingham Track Elite. So yourself, Johnny Davis, Mark Pierce, and others all part of that club there. And I read sort of in the prep for this sort of accountability and hard work being sort of real major ethoses or ethos in that sort of setup. So what does that ethos mean, and how do you sort of bring that with you into your training?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've approached that in different ways over the years. And I think only like reflecting now, I kind of understand that a little bit. There's different ways. I mean, sometimes accountability might mean knowing that people are going to look at what training you've done on Strava, things like that. I mean, you can always use social media as a great tool to kind of to get you up and get you going. But I think for me, at the end of the day, it's especially now during the marathon is, you know that in five and a half weeks' time, like I say, that gun's going to go off in Greenwich, and I'm going to be standing on that start line, and I'm either going to be ready for it or I'm not. So you kind of, that's the accountability. That's the end point, is that you don't have to put yourself there. But if you're going to be there at that time, then you need to be as ready as you can for it. Otherwise, then you've just got to be content. If you're not kind of willing to put the work in, or you can't, then that's fine. Just kind of be happy with that and do what you can. And yeah, you can kind of rest easy after that. I think a lot of time, well, I've seen a lot of athletes that have put a lot of pressure on achieving certain times and certain aims, which they're more than capable of, but kind of that whole power struggle in their head of what could be and how they're going to approach it kind of takes over towards the end. It's happened to me multiple times. So yeah, if you can be content leading into it, then regardless of what happens, you're going to come out the other end stronger.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, as we look ahead then to London Marathon, it's sort of be remiss of me if I didn't sort of ask about next year's and events and the potential of you running in some of those events. So a fairly jam-packed calendar, one of which being the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham, home games. So how much do you think about that? A little bit, some, not at all? Is it a very much a driving factor for what you're doing at the moment? And are you planning your London Marathon with that time target in mind?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I haven't thought about it multiple times about the opportunities to arise next year. All of the marathon guys that I've spoken to are in the same boat. I mean, you can double up on the track quite easily, but the marathon, there's going to be a whole lot of opportunities there that aren't normally there. It's going to be tough, and it's not quite clear cut. Never is with British athletics or the selection policies, but I think for me, it's having made kind of a few junior teams and a few England teams here and there, it's just putting myself in the best contention as I can. The main goal for me on October the 3rd is just going to be, number one, to kind of soak in the atmosphere. I mean, it's you only ever get to debut in a marathon once, and for it to be London Marathon, that's kind of a dream come true. So many athletes can only have a dream of that. So I feel thankful and fortunate for that. So number one is to soak it in. And the next one is, I love the phrase, to send it as well. So it is just going to be about kind of absolutely giving it whatever I can, emptying the tank for 26.2 miles. Obviously doing it in a strategic manner and not doing it all in the first half. But yeah, getting every bit of energy I can out over that distance and seeing what happens. If it means that I run 2:15, then that's brilliant. If it means that I can get under those 2:14 times or even quicker, 2:11:30, I think it is for the world time, then absolutely brilliant. But yeah, we'll see how these last few sessions go and work out kind of what pace we think we can set out at so that we can get to mile 20 and know that there's still a lot of work to go, even though it doesn't seem like it. Like that's when the race is going to start. So yeah, it's kind of breaking it down, I think, for me.
Great. Okay. You mentioned the selection policy there briefly. You're also part of the trials race in March in Kew, and obviously didn't go probably as you would have liked or hoped it to have gone. But looking forward, I suppose, in terms of the build and the race itself, do you take much forward from those sorts of experiences, or you lock them away and don't think about them until someone like me brings them up?
No, it's I thought about it a lot, and it was an absolute blessing. Luke, and he'll be listening to this, was kind of right all along in terms of I was down to be pacemaking the 2:14 group, that was there to go through about 25k for the 214 group, which I did, and that was great. But because of kind of where I was at, I hadn't raced in so long, and I'd kind of been building up with this idea to do a marathon. I'd done those sessions with Ben, and I was like, wow, I'm in great shape, which I think I was, is fair assessment. Probably naively not marathon shape, which I've kind of learnt now, maybe great 20 mile shape. And that's obviously a lot different to a marathon. But Luke had always said that pacemaking, that first one, getting used to it, getting used to a build, is going to be the best way to learn. I obviously had audacious plans and thought, yeah, it's fine, I'll do 25k and then I'll just join the pack and carry on, and I'll finish and I'll get a time on the board. And quickly I learned that it's not quite the same. There's a lot more pressures in terms of pacemaking and being up front and everything. So gave it a good crack, and I think I learned a lot by going quite deep and understanding how deep you can go, and that it didn't quite go my way. Learned quite a bit about fueling, so all of that was invaluable going into this build, understanding not only what I can do, also what I can't do in terms of getting things wrong or kind of being a bit too brazen. I think the marathon distance, you need to respect it, and if not, I mean, it's going to eat you alive. So yeah, lots of lessons learned.
Perfect. And then just more generally, I suppose, again, very important with next year, what are your thoughts on a trials type race in general? Are you someone who thinks those are the best way of sorting these decisions out, clear cut, or are you someone who prefers the taking into consideration of things?
Yes, I would love to see a trial race. The racer in me and the pure athletics fan would love to see a trial race. For me, though, there's a caveat in that everybody's got to be there. It can't be a situation where a few people maybe get discretionary buys or whatever it might be. I think that everybody should be there, and we should open it up to as many individuals as possible. We're not quite at the level of the US in terms of having such a deep field, but I'd love to see a group of at least 30, 40, maybe even 50 of the UK's top runners converging in a single location and giving it what for, and putting on some pacemakers for them. And like I say, even those that are trying to break into maybe the 220 sort of barrier, I think that if you're putting on a race like that, where the top end is going to be so sharp, then why not help all the way down the pyramid, you know, help some of those guys that are maybe thinking about it. Maybe their coaches themselves that can then obviously understand more and then go and feed that back to their athletes, whatever it might be. I think that's what I would love to see. I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of people would. But it's tough. I know that a lot of people have got to make money from the sport if they can. So it is a tough one. But yeah, I'd love to see that and to be part of it as well.
Yeah, I think in America, you see that huge drive for very good athletes, but not super elite athletes, try and hit that 2:19 time, don't you? So they can run in the trial. So
yeah,
even if you're not talking about the 2:04, 2:05 guys, it has knock-on consequences if you have a setup like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we've seen it in the track races this year as well. Like British middle distance in some of the events is so good and it's so strong. And that's because you've had so many athletes pushing, knocking at the door for so many years, and they see that it's there, it's tangible, so they can just reach out and get it themselves. So yeah, I'd love to see that.
Right, okay. Well, listen, Dougie, let's I'm going to throw a few of your PBs at you. We like to talk through our guest PBs. Change of tact here. I've got everything from your 400 PB, actually. So your 400 PB is back in 2014. You set in Bath 51.63, and then we move up 800, 152, from 2015. These are all from Power of 10, by the way, so do shout out if I've got them wrong. Your 1500 was a Watford BMC in 2016. You ran 3:46. Yeah. 3000, so we're getting into the sort of the longer stuff now, 8:03 in 2018, British champs, ninth place there. And then we spoke briefly about the steeplechase. Your steeplechase PB over 3K obviously is 8:38:54. And that was at 2017 in Letterkenny. What are your memories and what are your sort of feelings about the steeplechase at the moment? Is it something you still got fond memories of and perhaps try again, or is that in the past, do you think?
I don't know. I think I put a lot into it when I was going through it, and I think as a lot of athletes do, you put a lot of identity to something like that, and it definitely consumed me and became my identity to kind of an unhealthy point. So stepping away from it has been brilliant in a sense, and the marathon has been a new lease of life. Never say never. So who knows? I mean, there could be some good strength in the legs to maybe have a crack at the steeplechase next year. I think you get to the point of whatever kind of excites you in racing, whether that is just jumping back into a 3K chase. I'd hope the muscle memory would be there for the barriers, but we'd see. I'm not sure, but listening to some of those there, I mean, it really takes you back to those moments when you're in them. So thinking about it now, like how much it hurts on that last lap, I'm not sure, but yeah, it might be fun. Who knows?
Sounds good. Just as a bit of a side note, we've had a few guests talk about Mark Pearce this year not getting a place to Tokyo.
Yes.
I suppose that must have been, obviously, you knowing Mark, it must have been fairly hard for him, and just seemed a bit of a mean-spirited decision, I suppose. I mean, you might not want to say that, but it must have been tough for Mark not to get that place to Tokyo.
Yeah, I think I've known and trained Mark for a few years now. And absolutely loved the guy to bits. And I was devastated when he didn't get the selection. I'd be lying again if I didn't say that you could kind of see it coming in terms of just the way that British athletics are. You always hope and think that they're going to change. They're kind of like a really bad ex-partner or something like that. They're just not, it doesn't change at all, I guess. But yeah, you kind of wish that they're going to do something better. But again, they've got to hit targets. Being on the industry side of things now, I can kind of appreciate it from a bit of a different angle. We've all got to kind of justify our jobs, and we've all got to do things we don't always like sometimes. But yeah, it was on a personal level, it was tough. But I mean, he's bounced back in the best way possible. The guy is resilient, and yeah, I saw him smiling at the track a few days later. So
that's good to hear.
It was amazing.
Great. All right, back to your PBs then. You're 5,000 on the track, 14:02.
Yep.
Solihull BMC, first place. 5K on the road, 14:08 in 2019 in Ipswich. You're probably one of the few guests whose 5K road PB isn't at Armagh. Have you had a crack there or hope?
No, I haven't. I do need to go. I'm always one of those that probably stayed away from it and been like, yeah, it's not 5K. Actually, yeah, I need to get down there and go and race.
Okay, sounds good. 10,000 on the track was just recently. So we saw you at the Oregano Project Distance Classic. Bit of a solo paced run there. You ran 29:35. 10K on the road, 29:23. We're second place at the Brighton Marathon 10K, which is a fairly big event. Having run the marathon there, it's on the same day, isn't it? So that must have been a fairly good day out for you to finish second at that event.
Yeah, yes and no. The results, the power of 10 won't show that I was second by a single second.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it was, I kicked too early.
Okay.
Neither tricky one. But no, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. And that was the first, that was one of the first road races that actually, I think I got into the whole idea of it, like being around so many people. So yeah, that was a good one.
And obviously a half marathon, 64:36 from a few days ago.
Yeah.
Any of those that particularly stick out as the ones you're most proud of, and anything on there which you think actually that needs rewriting, that needs taken down?
Well, I think the 400 days are gone. So yeah, that 51 is probably out of reach, and the 152 as well, possibly. I mean, I I love running on the track. I love racing. So if there's opportunities that arise, it's not unheard of that marathon, longer distance guys jump onto the track and kind of like throw in some speed, see where they're at. I mean, there's going to be some great strength in the legs, like I say. So who knows? I think the one that I would love to attack the most is the 10K distance. I think that's a one that I can unlock a lot more in. So that'd probably be the first area to focus on. Road probably first, because it'd be a bit of an easier transition to go down in distance. Again, Armagh 5K would be a great opportunity. And then those track races, I think you start to get to a point where you've got to kind of focus and pick the right one and then commit to that specific race. So, yeah, but cool. 10K on the road probably first.
Okay. And then I tried to pick out a few, as we do with most of our guests, perhaps big performances, but that aren't necessarily PBs. So you won the Bucks National Indoor 3000 in 2017 in Sheffield. You represented England in Spain with that half marathon in 2019. You won the Birmingham 10K in 2019. You've also had some fairly good performances, or very good performances, in, at the road relays in Sutton Park and over the cross country distance. So perhaps a performance that you're really proud of that isn't necessarily a PB.
Gone silent now. There's a few. I think there's a few. Number one, or the top three, is definitely the Bucks 3K indoors. Mm-hmm. Just the way that was raced, me versus Chris Ollie in the last 200 metres was brilliant. Great race against a great individual, and it was kind of just a real honest one. So that was nice. The road relays is an interesting one. One of the years I got the course record before Emil Caress, I think, has it now. But I actually got that course record, fastest leg, on my birthday, which kind of all fell into quite a nice trio. So that was always, that was quite a memorable one, actually, just because, yeah, everything aligned. And then the other one, apart from that, is, I don't think one you've actually mentioned, was home country's cross country. Back in junior, Woolerton Park. Actually, that whole cross-country season, because I placed third at the National Junior Cross-Country at Woolerton Park, which was my home, back in Notts, was my home closest ever been. So that was an incredible experience. And then a few weeks later, going back to Woolerton Park, running for England, first time running for England, and won the home counties, or country, I can't remember what it's called, but... that season was probably the highlight, but it's an age ago now.
Perfect. Well, let's talk about ages ago, and we also like to look at our guest's first entry into Power of 10, and yours was in, well, it might, it, yeah, 2006 as an under 13. You ran an 800 meters. Remember what time you ran?
I'm gonna go with a 2:32.
Yeah, 2:32, yeah, in Birmingham at the UKA Young Athletes League. Do you remember much about those days?
I remember going to get my first pair of spikes, which is probably around about the same time. Well, it would have been around the same time. I also remember my dad always comments that after, it was either that race or maybe the year after, did an 800 metres, and he's always pitted how tired I am after a race against that single day, because it was hot, and like he's got, I think he's got a photo of me at the finish line, and I'm just red faced. Probably haven't gone out in like a 60-second first, and then jogged it around in like a 120 after that or whatever. But yeah, so he always pits every performance I do against how I looked then and how I look after a race nowadays.
Perfect, lovely. Well, listen, Dougie, we like to finish off with a few quick fire questions. So if that's okay with you, we'll throw those at you now. Take as long as you like to answer. If you could go for a run with any sports person, dead or alive, who would it be and where would it be?
Ooh, sports person would have to be... Oh, I don't know now. You're testing me. See, I don't want to go someone cliche like Prefontaine. I feel like I want to go someone more, okay, a bit different.
Is it only running you're into? Are you into other sports as well? Are you? Yeah,
big, running, fan, didn't you? Big fan of cycling. Big fan of rugby as well. Actually, in fact, growing up, probably Austin Healey was my idol growing up, which is a bizarre one. So I don't think he'd run, but yeah.
Great. And in terms of location, favorite place to run? I think I've seen you along the Birmingham Canal a couple of times, but where's your favorite place to go for a run?
Yeah, I'd say Birmingham Canal is probably not the best on there, but for me, I'm pretty easy actually. Give me a wooded trail. I'm up in Harrogate at the moment, just been out for a run along trails, and that was beautiful. But my favourite trail is Fontremeau. There is anyone that's been, it's a 9 mile loop. I'm going to get it wrong pronunciation wise, but it's Pyrenees 2000. Okay. And then you come back, crest over the, you go up a hill and you can just see the mountains ahead of you. And it's just tree lined gravel path in the middle. Absolutely stunning. So yeah, definitely Pyrenees 2000 in Fontremeau.
Sounds good. Next one. If you could go back in time to witness any sporting event, which would you choose?
Dave Wattle winning the 800 metres gold medal, because I would love to watch that not having known who won it live, because the anticipation and the exhilaration would have been incredible. Sure. So yeah, that one.
Okay, great. Touched upon it a little bit, I suppose. If you could be a professional athlete in a sport aside from running, what would you go for?
Cycling, definitely cycling, yeah.
So are you into the sort of the grand tours and you watch those?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I'd love to take up more cycling. But I just don't have time. Just running too much, it seems. But yeah, maybe one day, maybe after the legs have given up for the amount of running.
Okay. Any pre-race rituals or superstitions?
No, not really, actually. I have done over my time. I've thought certain things work better than others. But no, I've come to the point now where it's pretty, yeah, I'm a pretty non-fussy guy.
Perfect. Okay, then. And then the most important one, race day, are you going for split shorts or half tights?
This has changed over the years. So it used to be split shorts religiously. But now I think, you know, I'm going to say it's pretty much since Kipchoge. I think since Kipchoge and the break into, everyone's started going arm warmers, singlet, and the half tights. So it's changed to the half tights a bit more now. Yeah, I'm getting a little bit older as well, so you kind of feel a bit more respectable in the half tights, you know?
Great. Sounds good. Perfect, Dougie. Listen, thanks so much for giving up some of your time. We really appreciate it. Best of luck for the next 4 or 5 weeks and lead up to London, and I hope the race goes perfectly for you, and hopefully next year as well. So thanks again. We'll be cheering you on, and yeah, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, and thanks for having me, guys.
Cheers. Thank you.